a 100. In the meantime, the Carter Cowboys kept on winning. They finished the regular season with a record of 8 wins and a tie, and number 6 ranking in the state. As they headed into the playoffs, many considered them a serious contender to win it all. Until the anonymous phone call. Take a look at Gary Edwards' grade in Algebra 2, state investigators were told over the phone. See how it was calculated. Try to figure out how he came out with a 72 when the only way he could have gotten it was by the people over at Carter inventing a new math in which precious points were plucked out of the air for football players needing a 70 to stay eligible. Get the teacher who had passed him, an algebra teacher no less, to do the computations again. Find out that Gary Edwards hadn't passed algebra at all, but flunked it. Conclude from that Gary Edwards had actually been ineligible for the past 3 weeks, which meant, under the rules, that Carter would have to forfeit all 3 games played during that period. Now, do new computations. Take Carter's district record of 4 wins and a tie and change it to 2 wins and 3 losses, a record that would no longer be good enough to make the playoffs. Agatha Christie couldn't have erected a more chilling, more perfect plot. It was one thing for Gary Edwards to be ineligible. It was another for him to be discovered to be ineligible at a time when he would take the whole Carter team down with him. The anonymous caller turned out to be exactly right. When the grade was recalculated, it came out to 68.75. Marvin Edwards, the newly installed superintendent of the Dallas schools, who had come from Topeka, Kansas, arrived at a simple conclusion based on the obvious proof in front of him. Gary Edwards was ineligible to play. Carter had to forfeit the 3 games in which he had played, and Carter was out of the playoffs. It seemed straightforward enough, but Marvin Edwards apparently forgot one thing. He wasn't in Kansas anymore. Supporters of the Carter Cowboys were livid at his decision. Several angry meetings were held that night, and people arranged for some of the city's most powerful black lawyers to represent them and immediately begin preparations to file suit to prevent the Carter Cowboys' ouster from the playoffs. They got on the phone to school board members, and Marvin Edwards himself, no relation to Gary, came to one of the meetings and saw just how upset people were. As long as Gary Edwards had a failing grade in Algebra 2, there actually wasn't much that could be done. But Rousseau, the Carter principal, then came forward with a solution of his own to the problem. He changed Gary Edwards' grade. Peering into Bates's gradebook, a document that was later brandished about in the courtroom as if it were a murder weapon, he saw the notation NC for one of the daily homework grades. To Bates, that no credit was the equivalent of a 0, because Gary never had made up the homework by the time he was transferred out of the class. Rousseau decided it should have been a 50. It was a fortuitous number, because it meant that Edwards' grade in algebra, as changed by Rousseau, was now 70.4. Gary had now passed Algebra 2 by 0.4 of a point, and the Carter Cowboys were back in the playoffs. If the superintendent of schools could somehow be convinced that Gary Edwards had, in fact, not failed Algebra 2. A day later, after seeing grade reports provided by Rousseau, Marvin Edwards reversed himself. Gary Edwards had passed algebra, and Carter was back in the playoffs for the opening round game that night against Plano East. In later weeks, as the controversy raged, Marvin Edwards defended his decision by saying that it had nothing to do with football. At issue, he said, was local control and the right of a school system to determine in good faith the grade of a student without interference from anyone else. But many felt that Edwards had been unprepared for the outrage that greeted his initial decision to keep the Carter Cowboys out of the playoffs. The motivation for him to change his mind, they felt, was a desire to appease a constituency whipped into a frenzy over high school football. The issue wasn't local control. The issue was a state championship, which hadn't been won by a Dallas school in 38 years. The superintendent was pushing it because he was going to get lynched if he didn't push it, said Assistant State Attorney General Kevin T. O'Hanlon, one of more than a dozen lawyers who eventually became caught in the quagmire. The Dallas Independent School District hadn't had a state champion in I don't know how long. Edwards' reversal set off great celebrations of joy as black students from Carter held hands and danced at an impromptu pep rally. It also set off protests of fury as about 500 students from South Grand Prairie, the school that initially was supposed to go to the playoffs in Carter's place, staged a walkout and had to be urged to go back to class. Back in the playoffs, the Carter Cowboys beat Plano East 21-7 with two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. Gary Edwards scored the go-ahead touchdown, intercepted a pass to squelch a Plano East comeback, and then scored again. The following week, the Texas Education Agency ruled that Carter should remain in the playoffs. The same day, the school board of Plano, a predominantly white suburb outside Dallas, announced that it was filing suit to seek an injunction preventing Carter from continuing in the playoffs the next night. That Friday, the scheduled day of the playoff game, Texas Education Commissioner William Kirby, the state's highest education official, became the latest in a long list of people trying to figure out Gary Edwards' grade in Algebra 2, and also figure out what on earth was going on in the state of Texas. Part 3. Peering out into the crowd in the hearing room, one contingent of which was black and from the city of Dallas, and another contingent of which was white and from the suburbs, Commissioner Kirby couldn't help but wonder if the priorities of the public had gone slightly mad. American education was faltering, and Texas was no shining exception. The state ranked 35th in the nation in expenditures per pupil for public education. Its average SAT scores ranked 46th in the nation. Earlier in the year, a landmark $11 billion lawsuit that would determine how local school districts were funded by the state had played to an empty courtroom. Here, with the issue of whether the Carter Cowboys would stay in the playoffs or be replaced by the Plano East Panthers, the place was packed and frothing. The Secretary of Education spoke here in Austin on Monday and decried the academic achievement of American children when compared with other industrialized countries. "We ranked 13th out of 13 in science," Kirby noted before beginning the hearing. "Yes, football and extracurricular activities are important, but shouldn't we also concern ourselves with science and math and reading and writing? Tonight I'm told there may be 40,000 people in the Cotton Bowl watching a high school football playoff. Today, this room has many interested and concerned individuals. The papers have been filled with stories of the controversy. All of these are appropriate, and all of these should have been done. But I urge y'all, and all of the people of Texas and America, don't leave the weightier matters undone. Put some of your time and effort and attention and energy on improving academics and on emphasizing academics." After saying that, Kirby then plunged into the morass. It seemed a trivial thing for the state's highest education official to spend time doing, but Kirby felt compelled to uphold the integrity of the no-pass, no-play rule. If a principal could come in and simply change a grade from fail to pass without any compelling reason, then what was the purpose of the rule? And how could it possibly achieve the intended purpose of shifting the focus of Texas high schools away from the gridiron to the classroom? Kirby patiently listened to the testimony and ruled that Gary Edwards had flunked Algebra 2 and was ineligible to participate in football under the rule of no pass, no play. An hour later, The University Interscholastic League, which sanctioned high school sports in the state, kicked Carter out of the playoffs and replaced it with Plano East. Supporters of Plano East cheered and said that justice had been done. But lawyers for Carter and the Dallas School District weren't about to quit. With the kind of frantic behavior that is usually associated with trying to stay the execution of a death row inmate, they rushed to the Travis County Courthouse in Austin and asked District Court Judge Paul Davis to grant a temporary restraining order, delaying the playoff game until the court had an opportunity to consider all the issues in the case. Among their legal arguments, the lawyers said that depriving the Carter Cowboys from competing in the playoffs would cause irreparable harm. With 90 minutes left before the game, Davis granted the order. The Carter Cowboys had been saved from the electric chair. They were back in the playoffs. The game was rescheduled to Saturday, and Carter won 28-0. A week later, Carter easily won its third playoff game against Lufkin, 31-7. Gary Edwards scored a touchdown and intercepted a pass. The following week, a hearing began in Judge Davis's courtroom to consider once again Carter's right to play football. Carter supporters had raised $17,000 to help pay legal fees, and the number of lawyers representing Carter and the Dallas School District in the case, 8, was more than the number of lawyers who had represented the school district in various stages of a federal desegregation suit filed against it. There were some other unusual developments as well. Will Bates, who a month before had been an unheard-of math teacher, was suspended from his job with pay, reportedly because of concerns over his safety if he continued to teach at Carter. Gary Edwards, a high school senior, suddenly found himself as hounded by the media as Ollie North. "I didn't have any privacy," he later said. "I would walk into my classes and there they were. Right there in my classroom. I was walking down the hall. There they were. I would go to football practice. There they were at my locker. I'm standing there naked, and there they are trying to nail me. I go out to practice. They won't ask questions, this and that. Then I go home, and the phone's ringing, and they want to talk to my mother, my father, and me, and drive by. Sometimes I just snuck out the back door and went to my grandmother's or something." By the time the Carter Cowboys were scheduled to face the Marshall Mavericks in the quarterfinals, the hearing hadn't ended. Carter went ahead and played Marshall, who was undefeated and ranked 10th in the country. Blessed with a certain magic at this point, the Cowboys won on a touchdown pass in the final 3 seconds, 22-18. That put them into the semifinals against the Magic of Mojo. As the contest approached, it didn't seem as if Permian and Carter were playing a football game at all, but were representing two vast constituencies desperately intent on bludgeoning each other, one exclusively black, the other exclusively white. To whites across the state of Texas, Dallas Carter was a no-good bunch of cheaters who didn't deserve the honor of playing for a state championship. What else could you expect from a bunch of niggers whose idea of passing a course was showing up for class? To blacks, Dallas Carter was being persecuted by whites who didn't want to witness a black school with black players and black fans go to state and win it. What else could you expect from a bunch of racist rednecks who couldn't stand the fact that the best damn team in the state of Texas didn't have a white starter on it? In any playoff contest, there were always several issues that had to be negotiated before the game. They were normally taken care of over the phone, but that proved impossible in this case. Instead, Permian and Carter agreed to a sit-down at the Midland Airport the Sunday before the game. 4 members representing Carter flew into town, where 5 members representing Permian were waiting to meet them. With a suspicion of warring mafia families, they exchanged bloodless greetings. Then they moved to the back room of the coffee shop, where they could have some privacy and try to resolve the various issues associated with playing high school football in this particular instance. Money, where the fans should sit to minimize possible outbreaks of violence, how many officials should be black and how many white. They first tried to settle the thorny question of where to hold the game. One possible option was for each side to agree on a neutral site. Another was for each side to pick a mutually agreeable home site and then flip a coin for it. Carter initially picked Texas Stadium as its home site. "What would it take you to come to Texas Stadium?" asked Carter coach Freddie James. 16, replied Wilkins, the athletic director for the county. He wanted $16,000 up front to defray transportation costs, which included a chartered jet for the team and hotel expenses the night before the game, as well as the costs of travel for the band and pepettes. Permian, in turn, picked Ratliff Stadium as its home site. The Carter contingent said it would only consider playing there if the Permian band, pepettes, and student section were moved from their normal location on the visitor's side to the home side. He said the move was necessary because of a concern that noise from the Permian band would distract the Carter coaches when they tried to talk to their players. But a few minutes later, they indicated it wasn't noise from the band they were worried about at all, but the ramifications of putting white supporters of Permian next to black supporters of Carter. Permian principal Gerald McClary said police were always on duty at the stadium to handle any crowd control problems. Bringing in the police, the Carter contingent responded, would only make the situation worse. "We've got an all-black community," said Louie Harris, a representative from the Dallas School District Athletic Director's Office, negotiating for Carter. "You send police over there, and it says..." "You don't want police over there, or what?" snapped Wilkins, his lower jaw throbbing up and down, those bottomless eyes shooting off darts. "We have a lot of problems we don't want to get into this table," she reiterated. "It's just different. We have a different community than you all have." Wilkins then asked Carter how many tickets they wanted set aside if the game was held in Odessa. Rousseau, the Carter principal, sat up in his chair and abruptly gave the answer. 2,000 student, 6,000 adult, he said. Wilkins considered the request ridiculous. There was no way that many people from Dallas would come to a football game 350 miles away in Odessa, and he didn't want to tie up such a large number of tickets. The only people who traveled such long distances to games in massive numbers were Permian fans. "There's no way you'll sell 6,000, he told Rousseau in a tone that was terse and scoffing. Rousseau shifted in his chair and became slightly indignant. "You don't understand the gravity of what's been going on in this community, and we do," he said. "It isn't just the Carter community, it's the whole black community," added Harris. "The issue's not football anyway," said Rousseau. "It's the attack on the black community all over Dallas," said Harris. "The football game is just a catalyst." The negotiations became more and more tense, and the Carter contingent changed its mind. Forget the thought of ever playing in Texas Stadium in the white suburb of Irving. Think now about playing in the Cotton Bowl, deep in the heart of Dallas. That was Carter's new choice for a home site if it came down to a coin toss. The Permian side was momentarily stunned. Even Wilkins became speechless, and his face smoldered to a deep red. The Cotton Bowl. Of all the places Permian wanted to play the Carter Cowboys, the Cotton Bowl was the last. Its location, a little east of downtown Dallas, made it a magnet for the city's black community. The place would be crawling with them. "If it's a Cotton Bowl, they'll have the whole black community," said Permian assistant Hollingshead in a private meeting out of earshot of the Carter contingent. The two sides finally agreed to play the game at a neutral site in Austin, at Memorial Stadium of the University of Texas. In the meantime, both coaches agreed that a crew from San Antonio would officiate the game, with the stipulation that at least two of the officials be black. When Harris, John